Chema. So now we are going to take up the last three volumes, presently the last three volumes, but I believe some more volume is also or are also likely to come of Mother's collected works. So the last three volumes, that means 18, 19, 20, up till 17 is part of her collected works, but now they have taken out 18, 19, 20, and I believe maybe 21. It's understandable because as people leave their bodies, so they discover new correspondence. But I'm not sure personally what purpose it serves, because almost everything that is needed is there, much more than that is there. So as far as the practice of your sadhana goes, everything is there. Even historical context, yes, it does give some idea about the personal struggles of people. Like, for example, as I was sharing, you know, those whom we see today as stars, they, each of them had their own struggles, which to that extent is understandable. And that is, even if you don't read a single letter, it is understood that you can't take a leap. The evolutionary process is there for human beings, for every being. So even Sri Aurobindo and the mother have to go through that, subject themselves and go through that to set an example for all of us. So that is understood. So when we read, I was reading correspondence with Amritda, Champaklal ji, many others, then you see that they had to go through their own struggles, and what we see is a finished product, but the finished product is a much later issue. So to that extent, I'm not sure how much it will help from the sadhana point of view. Of course, a person who is aspiring can pick up anything and it helps, because always there is something. And there is, of course, the joy of seeing the mother relate with each one differently. That's something very interesting. But sometimes I find it very strange. Here also I find it. I don't know how it has escaped the notice of people, but I find it strange, and I must share it, that there are places where mother has written a note and then she has said, cancelled it, and she has said this is not to be published. Not because there is anything wrong with it, but she gave something else. Now even that is published, which I have found very strange. I mean, it's not necessary, not that it's something very personal or something. But the least as disciples we think we should do is to just obey what she has said. That's the fundamental thing about yoga. So it seemed to me at times that it is done with the idea of a historical understanding. But then that one misses the point, and an average reader doesn't know the difference. Nevertheless, always it's good to read what Mother and Sri Aurobindo have spoken to different disciples. But the risk of being misquoted becomes also very high. And so I was debating whether we should read it or not. But then I thought, yes, there is a risk of misquoting or misunderstanding. Therefore, we should read, number one. Second is that since it connects with the mother, everything is a joy. So to that extent, yes. But as I say, that if you read through 400, 500 pages, you may ultimately find that there are some 10, 15 main letters which are extremely, which are helpful. And their essence is already there in other letters. So to that extent, it is true. But nevertheless, we'll dip into it. Some of the things which is interesting is that they are there in the agenda, and they were not part of the collected works, and it's there in the collected works, which is something very beautiful. So one of them, which is very interesting, a small little note, and I have read it in agenda, but it's very useful, because there are people who don't understand, even now in big forums, oh, this is the same thing that the Vedic Rishis did, and the Vedic Rishis were doing the same thing, and Sri Aurobindo and the mother are continuing. So, you know, some of us try to explain that this is not exactly the same thing. But now we have something from the mother's writing, so it becomes very, very clear. And it's so clear, when we just read this two sentences, things will be clear. So she says, page 64 of volume 18, what would now be volume 18. They have not mentioned the volume number. So if you take as collected works, it stops at 7. So now we have new words of the mother. So she says the Vedic rishis thirsted for immortality. There is a long conversation on this in the agenda. And I was very happy to read that long back. So it is true that if you really read through the writings, ultimately they are seeking for immortality. So you would say, but aren't Mother and Shurbindo seeking the same thing? No. So that completely changes the perspective on Veda vis-a-vis Shurbindo and the mother. There is a correspondence. There is always a correspondence somewhere or the other. But let's go step by step. Buddha wanted permanence. So true. He speaks about the permanent. He said whatever is transient, temporary, nothing to do with that because it brings dukkham. Because obviously you get attached. But Sri Aurobindo gives it a new understanding that dukkham is not because things are transient. It's because we get attached to things which are transient. There's a beautiful letter of Sri Aurobindo that blows do not fall upon you because there is something bad in you. They come to all people because they are attached with things that are by their nature transient. And hence we feel sorry or sad when we lose them. So problem is not the transience. Transience is a process through which we have to arrive. But if we get attached to it, believing it is permanent, this is going to give pain. So, but Buddha understood. Buddha bypassed that stage of, you know, being attached, though he mentions that. But basically he says the nature of the world, it's transient. It's full of suffering. Shri Krishna also says, Anityam Asukham Lokam Bhajasumam. So, but Buddha ultimately, even all kinds of, even the construct of a personal God, he goes to that extent. And Mother described this experience at one place. Of course, Sri Aurobindo and Shri Krishna speaks of the permanent as the divine. There is a divine personality. But that is unique to Sri Aurobindo and Shri Krishna. Otherwise, normally when we speak about God as personality of God, we are either referring to the Sagun Brahman or we are referring to a personal deity. But both Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo speak of the divine as not just permanent, but also a divine personality, which of course is permanent. It's understood. But for Buddha, it was enough. Wanted permanence. So he didn't talk about any personality because personality is a form or aspect that even God may take. So why be attached to that? Jesus preached compassion. So we have these three. Vedic rishis thirsted for immortality. Buddha wanted permanence. Jesus preached compassion. Sri Aurobindo promised perfection. Now this is where the whole thing changes. Now perfection, of course we are not going to speak about perfection today. We have once had a talk. What is perfection? By its nature, perfection cannot be something fixed. The moment you fix something and believe it is, you know, perfection, then you are seeking permanence. There is a difference. Perfection means in the flow of time and the flux of time. I compare it to a expert swimmer. So we say, oh, he is a perfect swimmer. Everything is moving. He is moving and the sea is moving. And yet he is a perfect swimmer because with each change, he is just giving the response which is needed for that. So perfection here would mean that completely, everything in us is completely submitted to the divine will and acting according to that. There is no other construct, no other mental conception. Then only perfection is possible. Perfection cannot be a static state. So she speaks of perfection. But then she says something very interesting. And to attain it, the first thing needed, what men need now, is security. This she describes at great length. Because they are living in a transient world. Everything is changing. So how do you get security? And of course she speaks about security in the divine himself. So both things are needed. Security in the divine. And then you play with this world, work towards perfection. So this is a very comprehensive small little summary. And this one, though we know it, but once again it's good to remind. Sri Aurobindo's is not a religious thought. There is worship, there is love, but love and worship are not religion. We have been reading Yoga of Divine Love. So religion starts that way, but it stops where it starts. It is happy with worship, and the God who is constructed is very often an image of one's own aggrandized personality, and he is at the service of man. That's religion. But when you start with the God and you start loving him, you must become what he wants you to become. He is not at your service, but you are in his service. Then it becomes spirituality. So that is the fundamental difference. It is an error to think it to be religious. He himself has declared it very clearly. Religious thought is a kind of activity of the human mind, and one who wishes to attain the truth has to go beyond it. Not that it has no place, if you want to, people come from different approaches, but one has to go beyond it if one really wants spiritual life. In religion, there will always be a gap, a distance between that which you worship and that which you are. And mostly religious thought turns around obeying, but this obedience is something very mechanical. It's instructed as given in the book. At the same time, the purpose of this obedience is ultimately a supra-terrestrial state of usually some heaven, some proximity where one will have a post-mortem salvation, some good life afterwards if you obey it here. That's the basis of almost all religions. And then they bring in the element of fear. So fear and desire play a very big role in religious thought. But in spiritual thought, it is love with the idea of identifying, becoming one with the divine. So that is the difference. Religious thought is a kind of activity of the human mind. Okay. Then we know that there is a mantra which the mother would often say, Om Namo Bhagavate. But then again, see, this is the problem of these little letters. Now, if you have read through the entire passage, as there is a conversation on this in the agenda, then you will see that this is not enough. But still, for the sake of, we can read. So the mantra she would do is Om Namo Bhagavate. Now, people have adopted it as a mantra for themselves, and they use it as a mantra. Mantra has to arise within. And especially about this mantra, she has said that it works wonderfully with me, but with somebody it may leave the person cold as a turkey. It's not like I pick up a written mantra and start doing it. Mantra has to arise from within, or at least it has to be taken up by the heart. And I have seen this with my own this thing. I have mantra. Many people have their own mantra arising. But I wanted to do some other mantra, but every time I would try, I just can't help it because it goes on to the one which arose in my heart. So ultimately I gave up. I said, it's not like that. It's not what I want. And then the moment I took this approach, it's not what I want, then I understood the difference and what is the meaning and what is the reason. So mantra is something which has to arise in the heart. And here she speaks of Om Namo Bhagavate. The first word, that is Om, represents the supreme invocation, the invocation of the supreme. Second is Namo. So normally we do pranam, we bow down. But what does the mother mean? The second word represents total self-giving, perfect surrender. It implies perfect obedience, perfect giving of oneself to the divine and his will. The third word represents aspiration, Bhagavate. What the aspiration must become, divine. So here she has written it only as a hint. What the aspiration must become, dash divine. What we should become is divine. Elsewhere she has described it in great length, and it's important to know that. What she is hinting here. She says, when I use the word Om Namo Bhagavate, Bhagavate is referring to the divine. I am invoking the divine of the future. Because she is speaking of manifestation. So in manifestation, there is a past. There are forms of the divine in the past. There are ways of being of the divine in the past. They are divine, very much divine. But when she speaks of Bhagavate, she is invoking the divine of tomorrow. She uses the word tomorrow, she uses the word future. In the manifestation, divine is always moving forward. And that's what we see in the Isha Upanishad. Tadejati, tannejati, taddure, taduvantike. And the mother says, I'm always going forward, forward. So it is the divine of the future. So even with us, not as we are today is one thing, but we want to further progress. So tomorrow we should be closer, nearer as the divine wants us to be. So this is the whole thing about this mantra. And all those details, though it is not here, but it's wonderful. Here they've included the prayer of the cells of the body. So this is there in the agenda. It's not there in her regular volumes. And prayer of the cells of the body, basically, she gave, we know that physical education department, sports, all this was part of the ashram activity. But people were doing it. Even now, many people do it because it's part of the... to be part of the ashram ethos. But that's not why she wanted. After a long time, someone asked the mother, Mother, what should be the attitude of the body? She said, I thank God, I was waiting that somebody would ask me. And then she gives an invocation of the cells of the body. And this is the prayer of the cells in the body. Now that, and now we understand the context, after so many, not years, decades, physical education started around 43, 44. And this prayer, if I am not mistaken, now this year is written in 1967. Couple of decades have passed before people understood why do we go there, what are we really doing? So they asked her and she gives this prayer. Now that, by the effect of the grace, we are slowly emerging out of inconscience and waking up to a conscious life. An ardent prayer rises in us for more light, more consciousness rising within the cells. So the prayer she has given, O Supreme Lord of the Universe, we implore thee, give us the strength and the beauty, the harmonious perfection needed to be thy divine instruments upon earth. It's a wonderful prayer. It's on page 82 of volume 18, which is now as New Words of the Mother. There are some very touching letters, small little letters, remarks. For example, one of them is, my very dear and beloved little one, this heart, mother is referring to her own heart, this heart bears the pain of the world, especially the pain of its ignorance and egoism, and any sign of light and true compassion is a comfort. So often, all this is there, I mean elsewhere also. Long, long back when I had read, I said, every time I am unhappy, I am increasing the mother's burden. And once I met Dr. Bist, he said something very interesting remark, very touching actually. He was the mother's personal physician. He was Jipmer's also director. Later on, he became director in World Health Organization. So the mother used to just call him to ask him, what is going on from the pure physical medical point of view? And she had told, no, I don't want treatment. Because he would say, but why are you then asking me? He said, I just want to understand from the medical point of view, not for treatment. So he was sharing this with me. It's a very personal anecdote. He's written in his book, which small little booklet, The Mother and I. Book, nothing much about it, but we're working together as part of Namaha. So he was saying that he never used to go for darshan. So I said, but why? I mean, he said, see, every time I went, I saw there are some 200, 250. Then it grew 500 people. Everybody, mother has to pick a card and give. So I used to think it must be tiring to her hand. It's a very touching thought. how tiring it must be. Say, I cannot do anything, but I can reduce at least my part of the trouble. So what a lovely, beautiful thought it was, that at least she will have to give to one person less. And he meant it. Very genuinely, you know, Dr. Basso, there have been, she says that in this world, when we suffer, actually, what are we really doing? And we say we are mother's child. What kind of a child? Every time one is unhappy, one is adding to the burden of the divine. Divine will take it happily. That's a different thing. That's the divine job description. But what is our job description? So we are only increasing his suffering. We are increasing suffering of the world. That's why she is invoking the universal divine. But here she says, every time there is any sign of light and true compassion, it's a comfort. To whom? To the divine. Just imagine. And this body, and she speaks of her body, this body has expanded so much that it feels all the pains and sufferings of other bodies. This is one of her experiences. So any suffering removed is a real relief to it. What we can do? The least we can do is our little, we are like little, you know, squirrels, gilhary. What else we can do? But this is in our hand. Oh, dearly loved child. Then she is very moved because of this feeling in the child. That mother, I don't want to see you suffer, and I feel she must have felt something. So she says, oh, dearly loved child, let me carry you in my arms of love to a complete cure. She says, I don't want anybody to suffer. But every time somebody suffers, it's a suffering to me. Physical, emotional, psychological, or psychological even worse, because physical suffering is still something not in our hands. We can adopt a Stoic's attitude, but psychological suffering is entirely our attitude. We have read this again and again. Entirely our attitude. Nobody else. It's not nobody to be, as such in sadhana, the first thing we learn is don't blame anybody. It's my attitude which has to change. For a sadhak, it's only that. Rest is all in the world. So if I have to change, what I have to change? Psychological suffering, it's purely my attitude. As long as I'm wanting somebody else to change or blaming somebody else for my suffering, I have not started on the path. The moment we start, we take it that, okay, I need to change my attitude. That's all, nothing matter. Somebody else may be right or wrong, that's not an issue at all. When? Once someone, he's still alive, so I can't take the name. A very important person. He was sharing. he was saying that somebody, each time he would come out, somebody would pass insulting remarks. Long, long back. Not later on. But I believe he was prepared for this. So somebody would pass a very insulting remarks. So what to do? So ultimately at one point he got very frustrated. He wrote to mother. Mother, it's very difficult and I have to pass by. So either you give me some other place or change my timing, something, so that I don't have to face this person. What would be mother's reply? We cannot imagine. She says, my children, do not feel insulted. It is only the ego that feels insulted and not the psyche. So, you know, totally a different story. He says, okay, now basically I have to change myself. My child has no right to feel insulted. Now I remember the full letter. My child has no right to feel insulted. It is the ego that feels insulted. She is not telling you have to go in another way. She is not saying, I'll call that person and tell her why you are doing. Don't you understand why you are in the ashram? You are not supposed to insult anyone. Nothing. She says, my child does not feel insulted. So there are many, many places, even physical illness. Somebody would go, Prithidi recounts it, that when she complained to the mother, see, now the attitude is very important. When we have a physical illness, what do we want? We want some sweet words, some comfort, some sympathy, some pity. A divine will not do that, just like that, because we grow weak, we become. So she described this in a book. What is that book? Eternal Smile? No, Prithidi's book. Eternal Moments, yes, Eternal Moments. It's a lovely book. So she used to fall sick, and one day she went and told the mother, "I have fever." He says, "Mother scolded me. I felt that I am guilty of having fever." So she didn't know what to say because it was group and everybody is around, and she goes and says, "I have fever," and mother scolded her. "Why you have fever? You have no right to fall ill." She says, "What do I do about falling ill?" But she says, for decades, it left her completely. She was removing that tendency which seeks attention, which wants comfort. Because then how will we seek comfort? Only in the divine. So that's why it's so difficult to understand the ways, but beautiful ways. Then another interesting letter. "I can no longer say me, for when I say me, people think of my body, and my body is no longer truly me. It is not yet transformed, and this leads to a confusion in their minds." After 63, if you read her writings, and at one place she says very clearly, "I am no longer in the body. I have gone on the other side of death." She in fact says, "I have gone through that, entered into the realm of death, just like Sri Aurobindo on 5th December, and I have gone to the other side." So she says that if you refer to the body, I cannot say what you are really speaking about. She has gone beyond that, in that realm. Something very interesting. "To calm all personal ambitions, I must declare that," because a lot of people want to, "Okay, I am also getting transformed, I am getting every hair turning black or God knows what, it's like transformation going on." But that will be there, but in what way? So she is saying, if for any reason this body becomes unusable. She is referring that way, that, you know, body has gone to its extreme, it's not. So will the work stop? People wrote like that. The work has stopped. First of all, they didn't understand what has happened, but that's a different subject. "If for any reason this body becomes unusable, the universal mother will again start manifesting in hundreds of individualities. The process of transformation. According to their capacity and receptivity, each one being a partial manifestation of the universal consciousness." He has made everything foolproof to make sure that the work goes on. And sometimes you feel very touched also. People would ask for her slippers. And she said, hundreds of people have asked for slippers, and at the end of the day, if I keep giving them, I'll have none to wear myself. Okay, here we find something which is not there in the collected works, but those who want the reference, because it is there in the agenda. So there are people who want to understand the 12 powers of the mother and what are they. They want exact reference from mother's writing. So here you will find it on page 88 of New Words of the Mother. "The 12 attributes of the mother, represented by the 12 outer petals of a symbol: simplicity, aspiration, kindness." Okay, first four are simplicity, humility, gratitude, perseverance; aspiration, receptivity, progress, courage; kindness, generosity, equality, peace. Now, this we all know. You'll have lot of now symbols of the mother, and some people write this. But what they do not know is something very interesting. Again, it's there in the agenda, but here it's mentioned in the footnote. "About these attributes, the mother commented, the first four concern the attitude towards the divine. And the last four, the attitude towards humanity." So what are the things which are toward the divine? Simplicity, Be simple before the divine. Humility, not before people. Oh, you know what? I am nobody, nothing. People take great pride that I am humble. Like some people even say, you know, when they go there, like in Gurudwaras they do, no? If you are a very big officer, you take up the Jute ki Seva. So somebody was once mentioning to me, in Hindi they say, Hum ta ji Jute ki Seva karte. Now I know that person is a very big officer in the Indian Air Force. I said, ye bol ke to khatam ho gaya sara. Matlab, it's like humility before others, because others say, oh, he's such a great man, yet he is doing this. Now see, what is it? It's another extra merit. In spiritual place, that is a merit. See, such a big man, he's an air marshal, still he is handling the shoes of others. What a great man. So humility is only in front of the divine. I know nothing. You know everything. That's humility. Humility is not before others, bending forward, backward. Third is gratitude. These four we should read. Gratitude is again not towards human beings. I mean, it's okay to give a thank you note. But gratitude is only towards the divine. At one place, Amal Kiran's letter, we'll read that later. He asked the mother that when people give things, sometimes they give me different things. Well, he was editor of Mother India and he was person so many people know. So what should I do? There are two attitudes. I can take it that no, I will not take anything. The other is I take it that everything is coming from the mother and I receive it. She says you should have that attitude. Everything is coming from the mother. And then how you use it is that she doesn't write in that letter, but how you use it is again you have to remember. Because he says, I don't take anything, I just send them to you. She doesn't say that. She says you have to receive everything as it is coming from mother. So you are not obliged, because that is the problem. If you have accepted from somebody, then you are obliged. She says, no, it's coming from the divine. So you are not obliged. And the fourth is perseverance. Perseverance is not trying to change someone. Very often people say that I have tried so much to change my wife or my husband or whoever, and the person has not changed. I said, if only 1/10 you would have tried to change yourself, the result would have been wonderful. It's not that the person is good or bad, because each one has to progress along their own lines. Who are we to judge or know whether what the person is doing is right or wrong? That's his or her line of evolution. But the only person I can try to change is myself. So these four things are toward the divine: simplicity, humility, gratitude, perseverance. Okay, yeah, this is the message we were talking about that day. Message on the wall of the staircase leading to the mother's room. You want to correct what the Creator is doing. That is a reminder. Then, even now, people want to do a lot of planning. What if this happens? That's how the mind goes. So I must do this planning. Everything checks and balances and everything should be perfect. This is not how ashram operates. And thankfully now we have a letter about it. So I'm going to read this letter. To an American visitor who suggested several ways to make the running of the ashram more efficient. People come and say, I can do this. And we know the famous story. I think it is the same American. One was General Rutledge, Admiral Rutledge. And he told mother, Mother, you just give me 2 month charge. 1 month, I'll set everything right. Mother laughed and said, you take 6 months. You have my authority. After a few days, he said, impossible. Because your principle is freedom and inner evolution. It's not about setting things outwardly right. So, I don't know whether it's the same person or not, but possibly. So, the mother says the starting point is wrong. Somebody who said several ways of running the ashram more efficient. She says the starting point is wrong. In the ashram, there is and should be no planning. Very difficult for mentalized beings to understand. Here is a quote. Because planning is a mental activity of ignorance. There are so many cities, places which are planned and they work very well. Everybody is very nice, very kind. You go there and you say, sir, welcome. You go to a store, no? Yesterday I had an experience. You go to a store and they'll open the door and say, sir, you're most welcome. Sir, please come. What shall we do for you? And then now in the ashram, pass, get pass. And then you say, nahi, 8 baje ke baad aao. It starts like, oh, why are people asking like that? There is a difference. There is a reason why it is like that. You are here to change yourself. Don't forget. This is the first man. The work has started at the gate itself. There are people who will make sure your ego is hit very hard. Now you take it or lose it. You have an opportunity. if you start arguing, you don't know who I am. I am someone, Mr. So-and-so. Is this how you behave? Is this how people behave? Okay, fine. He will also get into an argument. He will also lose his opportunity. That's their business. But here, there is a reason why no place. She has given such a long rope for change. Change comes from within. Only change which is authentic is change comes from within. For the rest, the world is there to see. What hypocrisy. So much hypocrisy. So much falsehood. People say one thing, feel something else, act in another way. Totally different. So she says the starting point is wrong. In the ashram there is and should be no planning. The activities of the ashram are like the growth and blossoming of flowers. They spring up when they are needed and in the way they are needed. And she uses the word reversal. If once you have experienced it, it's so strange. When the reversal takes place, you suddenly wonder, I was that person, where has he gone? You can't even call that person back. And there are several reversals which take place. It's an impossibility. You're trying to change, trying to get rid of something, trying to bring in, it's just not working. But that is serving as a catalyst. And one day suddenly it changes. Then you are wondering what happened. So this is how flowers bloom from within outwards. It is that inner aspiration or inner something, grace, which ultimately creates the change. It is obvious that things are not as they should be. She knows. She's not justifying anything. But not once has he grasped the real reason. People who come, pass comments and go away, they don't know. They are not as they should be because not a single person here is proceeding on the basis of a change of consciousness. It's not outer behavior, it's the change. Then behavior will change, but it has to change from within. And what it will do, we don't know. Imagine Mahakali's force rushing through the system. That's how we saw, no? Udarda suddenly telling, had the urge to tell to a lady sitting in the car that, you know, madam, it's easier to make a, it is said in the Bible, easier to make a camel pass through the eye to a needle, through a needle, than to make a rich man turn to God. Then he said, no, no, what am I thinking? It's very inappropriate. And he goes to the mother and says, mother, I felt like saying, but I control myself. Mother says, but I had inspired you to say this. You would have become my instrument. So when we look at life that way, it's so different. All of them ought to be conscious disciples who are changing their character and their attitude towards life. And plenty of experiences will happen to point out that I got to change myself. In fact, the only person anyways I can change logic is myself. That too is difficult enough. But we get so busy changing others. And this is the only way it can work, and it will work to the extent that they realize it. What time it will take is each one's. Then, what is, you know, becoming an ashramite, that also, this is a very interesting letter. Much more than any physical condition, it is faithfulness to the ideal and consecration to the work that make the true disciple. You may join the ashram, fine. You have a name in the register, you are on prosperity. But the important thing is faithfulness to the ideal and consecration to the work that make the true disciple. I think more or less. Okay, just a few more we'll read. Very interesting something on human love. Again, there are so many things he has said. We should not draw a conclusion from any one letters. But here, because this is a letter which is not there. We have already read some of our other letters. My revered mother, I love P. Full stop. I feel uneasiness if I can't see him twice or thrice in a day. But this beautiful is how what kind of relation people had with the mother. They are not thinking, I should not, should I not. But nowadays, I sometimes become eager to go and talk with him. So now it has taken the next level. Ma, I love him too much. In my view, P is very pure and sincere. Okay, it's an interesting letter. His nature is like a child. So I do not wish to harm him in any way. Also, to speak the truth, I myself don't want a bad reputation. Everything she is laying bare. What shall I do? See, like a child she is approaching. Ma, I want to think of you, but thoughts of P occur in my mind almost the whole day. So beautifully she is asking. I can't check myself, Ma, turn my love in the right way. See, ultimately she's saying, make my love turn in the right way. Oh, wait for the answer. I am making two handkerchiefs for P. Shall I give them to him? Now, very sweet letter, okay? I mean, whatever it is. But you expect the mother to write. We all can have our mental idea. Mother writes, give up at once all this nonsense. I also had a laugh in it. No, just... She's not giving any justification. I understand. I know it happens. See, you can do this way. Speak to him, but don't get too close. Nothing. Here you have that action of... She's seeing through the entire thing. Everything she has seen. So she's saying, give up at once all this nonsense. Not only will you harm yourself and perhaps harm him. She's able to see all that. If he happens to pay any attention to you. Say, if he pays attention to you, you'll end up harming him also. You claim to love him. Yourself you will harm. But you will end up harming him whom you claim to love. But you will make your stay in the ashram utterly impossible. It goes without saying that you must not give him the handkerchiefs. I love this letter that she's seeing, what are you doing, my child? You want to harm yourself, harm him, and you're giving, Ma, I love him so much, he's so pure, so safe. He's saying, leave him and you be with yourself and grow. How beautiful this is. Huh? I don't know. This is not written, but very beautiful. Then another letter. These are letters on human love. So, space 277. Those who want to go through back to the reference and put it somewhere. This is a common problem. Now, elsewhere she has said a very different thing. There are two ladies who loved the same individual. This is also true. And both have told me themselves. And both are now left their bodies so I can talk about. So one person she asked Mother, there is somebody who already loves him. Mother knew this. I feel love for him. What should I do? She said, your love is true. Keep it. Don't throw it away. And she, all her life, lived with that truth. That mother had sanctioned. Sanction means your love, the feeling of love is true. She could see through it. And therefore you keep it. There was no human notion about it. That, oh, don't you see he is already in love with someone or somebody loves him and you are further interfering. No, she could see through it. And when this lady was telling me, it was something amazing because this person whom she loved, I mean, I know their whole story, had only scorn. Scorn in the sense he was what he was. So there is mysteries of the divine. So she says, I feel that gradually I am becoming worse than before. Still I have got attachment to P. I think that everybody knows my weakness and is taking advantage of it. The notion that everybody knows about me is very unpleasant. What shall I do, mother? I feel much uneasiness. But the beauty is they could keep on writing to mother and ask. Even when she is reprimanded, she is not, oh, how dare, nothing. She is like a mother who cares about the child, who sees you are taking poison, so she would stop you, sometime scold you. But she would always love and you can open your heart to her. Mother, before I could not scrutinize my nature, but now many things are coming in front of my eyes. So slowly, you know, mother is making her conscious. Now she is seeing things which she was not able to. It is obviously the same person because P, constant. So I am becoming depressed because now she is seeing the defects of her own nature. Earlier it was only love for him. Now she is able to see. I am very selfish and narrow-minded. Mother, there is no love in me for human beings. So how can I love the divine? Now you see, this is a googly. When you write like this, mother, there is no love even for human beings. How can I love the divine? You expect that divine will possibly say, you must learn to love a human being properly and truly. Normally. Now this is a googly to the divine. And what does she say? It is not through human love that one can learn to love the divine. No ambiguity left. See, the same person she is carrying, and I mean, this was 51, the first letter. This is 55. So people have gone through this problem. It is not through human love that one can learn to love the divine, for the love is of quite a different nature. First, learn to give yourself sincerely to the divine, and then the joy of love will come afterwards. By giving yourself sincerely, all your difficulties will go. My blessings. So people used to go through all these things of loneliness. Sometimes, you know, it's a problem which everybody goes through. So someone has asked, Mother, I have a prayer. Could you tell me something, a few words which will give me the support I am searching for? I have a strong hankering for love and affection. At times I feel so lonely and helpless. This is not the same person. It comes now under different heading. Which comes to people. So people often say, oh, they could write earlier, what? You can still write. You can still write. Write it in a diary. People say, where to post? You don't need to post. I can say this by clear experience. Write in a diary as a letter to her. It's amazing. And she will work it out inside the same way. And one can read these letters. They are all there. I mean, all her works are there. She says, you feel lonely because you want to be loved. Straight away, touching the problem. Learn the joy of loving without demand. Just for the joy of loving. The most wonderful joy in the world. And you will never more feel lonely. Blessings. It's so wonderful. Love for the joy of loving. Nobody is stopping you from loving anyone. But if you demand, want, expect, there'll be problem for both. This is the essence of these two. This is a beautiful one-liner. True compassion understands everything, but corrects what has to be corrected and changes what has to be changed. So I think today we have almost this volume is complete. We are often worried about people's attitude, with whom we live, and it becomes, life becomes miserable. What to do? How to handle that? So, see, as a word, the feeling you have about the adverse attitude towards you of the people with whom you are living depends on some psychological condition in yourself. Again, we see, it's not about blaming, but if you have a problem, you got to change yourself. As simple as that. You may change place, occupation, or surroundings, but this inner experience will persist until you have made the psychological change in yourself. With my love and blessings. And every time when people would ask her, she would remind the same thing. Have you forgotten that you are here to do yoga and change your nature? This is the only solution to all difficulties. Not only solution, it makes life so wonderful. Because then it's limitless. You never grow old, because always there is something to change. And therefore there is a beautiful work which is at hand. And you feel such a joy and such a help. And when that changes, it's something so wonderful that you feel, ah, this is an achievement actually of sort. So again, this question that somebody has given to a Sadhika Vansari has sent a nylon sari and a blouse piece for me. I feel that the sari sending is only a gesture of goodwill and affection, but how can I accept anything from anyone without knowing your will? I earnestly pray for your guidance. So she has passed it on to the mother. Mother sends it back, says, here are the sari and the blouse piece. Then she gives something more general. When people are sincere and of goodwill, you can always accept blessings. This is what I must read, because so often I've seen this in programs which are done outside, which includes Auroville, which includes society. And I tell them, don't do this. You know, this Mahima Mandan, people coming and then all kinds of silly things, somebody, X, Y, Z. This is not how the ashram functions. This is not what she has ever wanted. And so, somebody must have been called to give a lecture or given a lecture. She says, the lecture is very good, but no special reception, no social ceremony, because of all things, this is perhaps one of the most complete expressions of human falsehood. Okay, I think just one more. This, of course, for many women, it would be very uplifting. But I love this one which she speaks about. It's a one-liner. to be a true wife is as difficult as to be a true disciple. The mother did not want that women should cook for men. Why should they? Are they slaves? So all this helps us understand how far we are from the divine and the truth that is manifesting, and shows us the way. Jai Maa.